This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So a bunch of privileged, entitled activists in Seattle are finding themselves in a position where they're pretending to be the police because they get to do that if they want. In Seattle, they get to run things on the roads. They've decided to literally at times walk in front of cars to get them from driving through bus-only lanes in downtown Seattle. Now, it's being celebrated on Twitter by a whole bunch of crazy urbanists because they hate cars. They love this. They don't realize, of course, the concerns that normal people should have with getting in front of a car. Sometimes I feel like that might put you in a position to get hit by the car, and then, of course, you're going to blame the driver rather than yourself when you're the one to blame. They don't realize, I don't think, that they're actually making the climate change issues that they're concerned about even worse. And SPD, as far as I can tell, they're not getting involved. Now, I'm waiting to hear back from them. They'll get me a comment at some point today. I'll bring it to you the second that I have it, but they don't seem to be getting involved. Now, all of this is being inspired by some crazy woman who was caught on video and then uploaded on Reddit doing basically the same thing. I believe it was on maybe 3rd Avenue in downtown Seattle. We're just getting in front of cars and saying, bus only lane, get out. This is a bus only lane. And people are like, oh, that's so cool. She's inspirational. She's a superhero.
I'm sure her and the person that protests outside our building would get along.
It might be the same person for all we know. So then a Seattle Times reporter was out there videotaping some of other people doing exactly the same thing. They're literally jumping in front of cars in some of these videos. Mark Ostro, who is an urbanist, he tells the Seattle Times that he wants more penalties for people driving in bus-only lanes.
They're helping to gradually, kind of gently whisk cars out of the way and let some of the buses go through. And I think ultimately what we're asking from SDOT and from King County Metro is to improve this bus lane, to improve compliance by cars so they don't get trapped here. And so that everybody can keep moving in and out of downtown.
The funny thing is, in all the video, I did not see anyone getting stuck in the bus lanes. The bus lanes are completely empty. Now, I would totally understand if we're talking about there, and there's certainly portions of Seattle in which there are just bus after bus after. That's not what we're talking about here. We have people who are driving in these lanes temporarily to avoid some of the traffic, because if they don't, they're going to be stuck in traffic forever and ever and ever. Amen. And that's exactly what these urbanists want. Now, there are people like Kathy Tuttle, another activist, who told the Seattle Times via Twitter that she's fighting for the climate when keeping these drivers out of bus lanes. Yeah.
So I'm Kathy Tuttle, and my whole vision is one of climate action. And
it should be, my name is Kathy Tuttle, and I am an urbanist. Hi, Kathy.
One of the most important things for our climate is to actually have protected bus lanes, truly protected lanes, so that people can rely on being able to take the bus quickly, efficiently, and know that they're going to get to the places they want to get on time. And right now, if we don't protect our lanes, people don't take the bus, or when they do take it, they don't get to work on
get
time. So that's why
lane.
We're out here flagging it's down people who are driving in the bus lane, because we want to actually make buses the best way to get around Seattle.
Okay. So let me go, because she's the climate activist. When you've got an empty lane that is not being used at all, it generally is next to, in this case, a bunch of cars that are idling in a very congested lane. That car that's idling still has to drive to its end destination, right? Got to get from point A to point B. The longer that car doesn't get to point B, the longer that car is operating, the longer that car is polluting the environment that you're fighting so hard for. So understand that by forcing people into those car lanes the way that they are doing, they're making the negative aspects, the pollution aspects, way worse than they otherwise would be. I just want to throw that out there. And as people pretend that these people are somehow heroes, understand this. And maybe we'll test this out with producer Tom. If we were going around and we were trying to police the bicyclists, the ones who choose not to wear a helmet, even though that's against the law, the ones who choose to ride across a red light without even stopping and putting cars in really tough positions because no driver wants to hit a bicyclist. But no driver actually wants to hurt another human being. They don't want to have to deal with the trauma of running into a bicyclist. If we decided to stand outside of our studios on Eastlake and police all the bicyclists, we would not be greeted with the same kind of cheers that these people are getting on Twitter. We would be called evil. We would be called probably Nazis, because that's the new term du jour. They would be getting upset with us. And yet when they go after the drivers in a deeply unsafe way, they're considered heroes. That is the bias of Seattle transportation. That's the bias here. And you see a nice, wonderful, nice little Seattle Times story pumping them up. Something needs to happen. Fine. Actually leave the professionals to do it, not some crazy person with a red flag who's just yelling at drivers, get out of my lane. This is for the bus. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
A woman in Ballard was attacked by a repeat offender with a pitchfork. And this repeat offender had just been released from jail a few days earlier for a previous assault. This is absolute madness, but this is Seattle. This is the city we now live in. The guy's name is Daniel Kuchta. He's the one accused. Como reports that police say the incident unfolded in the afternoon of August 5th, so last week, when this victim returned to her car parked after visiting the post office on 17th Avenue. Now, the woman gets into her car. She closes the door. She's about to drive off when all of a sudden, seemingly out of nowhere, and I'm looking at the video, it literally looks he came out of nowhere. The suspect runs up with a metal pitchfork, thrusting it towards her and her head in that car. Now, the woman apparently screamed, help, he's trying to kill me, as the suspect attempted to stab her with the pitchfork in her leg, chest, and neck, according to the court documents. Now, the good news in all of this was she was able to protect herself with a purse. She held the purse in front of her, and the pitchfork kept hitting the purse rather than her. That's the good news. At the same time, a whole bunch of Good Samaritans, bystanders, they came running to help her. The guy with the pitchfork turns to them, realizes what's happening. He runs away. So he flees. More people start to run after him. And all of a sudden, they subdue him. They take the pitchfork away from him. And they hang on to him until police arrive. They get there. They arrest him. He apparently said that he just took meth right before the assault, which kind of makes sense, I suppose. And now he's booked into King County Jail, charged with 2 counts of second-degree assault. Whether we're talking about a case like this or the previous case, because I don't know what the other case was, whether it goes to either King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg or Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes, here's an unfortunate reality. He is going to get out of jail yet again, and he's going to commit something like this over and over and over again because we do not punish bad guys. According to Cairo 7 TV, earlier this year in Tacoma Municipal Court, this guy, Daniel Kuchta, or Kuchta, was charged with 2 misdemeanor assaults and obstruction of a public servant in May 2019. He was released on his own recognizance. When he failed to appear at his next court hearing, he had a warrant issued for his arrest. In July, he was arrested on a bench warrant and entered pleas of guilty to 1 count of fourth-degree assault on August 1. He was given a 364-day suspended sentence and released from the Pierce County Jail on the same date. Then he comes here into Seattle, and he allegedly attacks this woman with a pitchfork. His bail has been set at $75,000. Actually, it was raised to $150,000 because he has a history of violence. When are we going to take this seriously enough to stop it? I said this earlier. We don't have a hard time finding these stories. I know some people might think that, certainly our detractors would say, oh, this is the Seattle you want to pretend exists. As if we're digging for these stories. And right before, oh, finally, producer Tom runs in here, sweat dripping from his forehead. I found it. I found the crazy story. Oh, continue with your false narrative. No. These stories are everywhere, every single day. We keep stories off the air that we otherwise could deliver to you, but I don't want to do 3 hours of nonstop stories about bad guys who are prolific offenders. It happens because we allow it. Whether we're talking about Tacoma, which they clearly went easy on this guy, or whether we're talking about Seattle or Covington or Everett. We have these stories happening over and over and over again because we let it, because we're not getting in the way and we're not shining a big enough spotlight and we're not screaming loud enough. Instead, what do we hear the voices talking about? Not going after the prolific offenders, but making sure cars don't ride in bus-only lanes. Got it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770-360. Text in. Had one of those Good Samaritans pulled a gun and shot him, they would end up in jail. Yeah, probably. That's how crazy our judicial system here is in Seattle. They'll go after the guy with the gun who helped go after the bad guy with the pitchfork. Bad guy with the pitchfork, we're just going to let him off on his own recognizance. And hey, we're going to give you a nice place to shoot up meth. 1-800-465-8770. Another text from the 360. Jason, I know you guys don't want to do it every day on Prolific Offenders. Maybe you should do a Prolific Offenders week instead and just constantly tell the stories so people get the idea of what's going on every day. I don't think I emotionally can handle talking about these stories every single moment for 3 hours a day for a week.
It's pretty heavy.
It's not just heavy, but it's maddening. Because it's not like we don't have solutions to these problems. We do. We just have people in power who refuse to implement them. Keep those texts coming. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Sounders just added a whole bunch of big names to their ownership group, including Russell Wilson, Ciara, and McLemore. Joining me with more is Aaron Levine. He is the Q13 Fox Sports Director and host of Queued Up Sports, Seahawks Game Day, Talking Huskies, and so much more. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's a great day for Seattle sports in general.
It is. So let's talk a little bit about the context here, because this could have went a very different way. It could have went the way of the Sonics.
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, all we have right now is what Terry Meyerson, one of the new owners, wrote about on a blog, which I highly encourage everybody to read, on his LinkedIn account, which specifically talks about the last 15 months and how when he originally was introduced to majority owner Adrian Hanauer, he was told that Joe Ross, who was a minority owner in this team, was close to divesting his interest in the team, and he was going to be selling it to what we think is a California investment group, but that this California investment group was also trying to find creative ways to take majority ownership of the Sounders. And so if they have majority ownership and they're out of town, then who knows what could happen? I mean, obviously, the worst case scenario would be a Howard Schultz to Clay Bennett type situation where the Sonics were left with back in 2007, 2008, and they ended up skipping town to Oklahoma City. That would be the worst case scenario. But ultimately, that share of Joe Ross ownership goes to 11 local families who are tied to the Seattle area, who are big players in the Seattle scene, and ultimately will be nothing but good and a positive for the Sounders organization.
What does all of this mean day to day as far as the operation of the Sounders?
I don't think it's going to do much to the day-to-day operations, specifically if Adrian Hanauer is still your majority owner of the team. The team has done fantastically in the way that they've gone about their business over the course of the last decade or so. I don't think that's going to change one bit.
Well, and my sense is just looking at who's involved here, I don't see them being all that involved day-to-day, right? I mean, Russell Wilson is doing this because he wants to be a Seattle icon, right? This is part of his brand. He cares about this region. Same with the Microsoft CEO. Like, that's what this is about.
No, no doubt about it. And it's about keeping the Sounders here with strong local ownership. It's funny, though, going back to I'd had a sit-down exclusive interview with Russell Wilson a couple of months ago. And the thing that stood out to me was when he was a rookie, I asked him, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? He goes, I want to be a general manager of an NFL team. And that had evolved into now his eighth season in the NFL, saying that he wants to ultimately own teams. And when he said, I want to own teams, he goes, I want to own a football team, a soccer team, a baseball team, a basketball team. And at that point, he probably knew, because this was in the works, that he was ultimately going to become a co-owner of the Seattle Sounders. So, and funny part was, I also wanted to title that part of our interview, you know, Russell Wilson wants to run the world, and he probably will, because he has so many positive thoughts about the way he wants his life to be run and all. Obviously wanting to be an owner of so many different teams, this is the first step for him.
yeah, this is good news, regardless of how anyone feels about soccer, because I know I got a lot of people who don't necessarily like soccer, but this is about sports culture in Seattle, and this is really about cementing Seattle as a sports town. We just now have to bring, you know, the Sonics back, or at least some sort of basketball team back.
Yeah, and at least we are going to have a venue starting in 2021, and it's a first step with the NHL team, yeah. And hopefully OP Group is committed to bringing an NBA team, which they say they are, back into the building when and if the opportunity arises.
Fingers crossed, can't wait. We've been talking with Aaron Levine. He is the sports director for Q13 Fox and host of a whole host of different programs, including Seahawks Game Day. Aaron, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jason.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So my close personal friend, U.S. Ambassador Richard Gunnell, who we holiday together in Berlin because he's based in Germany. We talked a couple times. He was on the show once, and so he's my best friend now. He's calling out NBC News' Chuck Todd and Kristen Welker after he had realized that they had blocked him on Twitter. Now, my assumption is that he's the victim that I became when Meghan McCain decided to block me, which is they probably blocked him before he became ambassador because he was very active, Richard Gunnell, on Twitter in the past. And so maybe they didn't like what he had to say before he was a government official and they just had forgotten. In any case, Grinnell then tweeted at them, said, Chuck and Kristen love to debate the issues, but they don't like to debate me. And he sent a screenshot of both of their accounts showing that they had blocked him. Grinnell then went after the New York Times reporter Mark Lander for also blocking him on social media. He tweets, Mark Lander covers foreign policy for the New York Times, but he's interested in covering the issues, he says. And then he then again shows a screenshot of him being blocked by these individuals. So on the one hand, I generally say people get blocked for a reason, right? I certainly block people who become a little bit too trollish. I have a general rule of I will block you if you seem mentally unstable, meaning I'm legitimately scared for my well-being, thinking that you might come and hurt me. I will block that person. I block anti-Semites, people who are actively being anti-Semitic towards me, and depending on my mood, I will block a troll. Now, usually, when it comes to the trolling, I will just mute the person, which means I won't be able to see them trolling me, but they'll be constantly trying to get my attention, and there's some sick, twisted part of that I really like, that I won't see anything that they do, and they're obsessed with me. When you're an ambassador, the media should probably not, you know, block you. And once you find out that you're blocked, you probably should unblock them. If you want to be an honest journalist, and Chuck Todd wants to be a journalist. That's how he presents himself. I'm a talk show host. I'm not a journalist. Chuck Todd says he's a journalist, despite his clear bias. When you decide that you're going to cut off a very key player in the Trump administration, Ambassador Gunnell is a key player in this administration. He is a major ambassador to a major country, serving this country in Germany. The implications of that are very big. Grinnell is someone who is very Twitter savvy, who knows what it is he's doing. You can't actively cover this president. You certainly can't actively cover international issues if you're ignoring the ambassador to Germany. That seems like maybe you should fix that. But they're not going to, because a lot of these people like to create this echo chamber in which they live. That's a huge problem. With too many people on Twitter, whether or not they're media members, they create an echo chamber and they start to believe, because they've created this echo chamber, that everybody thinks exactly the way that they do. They cut out all of the voices that might get in the way. And then all of a sudden, they feel like the position that they're holding, the position that they constantly get seen mirrored back to them, oh, well, that's reflective of a greater societal belief, and oh, I'm clearly on the right side because everyone on Twitter tells me so. That's dangerous. And so anyone, in fact, for you guys, if you're out on Twitter, go out of your way to make sure that you're following people that you disagree with. You should learn about their perspectives. That's weirdly, as much as I loathe Twitter, that's one good thing about it, is I am not short of finding people who disagree with me, who are willing to tell me they constantly disagree with me, just so I can get a better understanding of who they are. But you should also follow me. I mean, that part is, I you know, echo chamber or whatnot, you should still follow me.
I mean,
you should.
You could.
I mean, like, I'm what they call prolific.
No, I mean, you definitely tweet.
It's in my
a
bio.
Lot.
It's in my bio. It says prolific. It says prolific on air and off.
I mean,
why would I put it in the bio if it's a lie? I didn't write the bio.
Yeah, you did.
No, I edited it. I didn't write it.
You wrote it.
I wrote it, but someone looked at it and signed off on it. They can't put out incorrect information.
No one signed off on it. Everyone kind of
writes my boss own. Said it was a good review.
You are the boss.
But my boss said it was good.
You are the boss.
Yeah, two things can both be the exact correct state. Like, you get it?
You're really...
Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-877. They'll go ahead and send you a link so you can follow me and all the hosts on KTDH. Text Twitter to 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. And I especially appreciate all the folks who are subscribers to the podcast, which means I don't appreciate you if you don't subscribe to the podcast. And rather than allow me to shame you on a regular basis, you can just subscribe by texting the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770 or just searching for the name Jason Rantz, wherever it is you download podcasts. When the woke get woked to death. I love stories like this. I don't love stories like this in the sense of I don't want to see people lose work. But when someone is so woke and creates the environment that ultimately is the reason why they lose a job, I can't help but sit back and smile just a little bit. Not again because they lost their job, but because maybe this will change their tune just a little bit. To create a less intolerant society. Sarah Silverman, an actor, a comedian, she ended up getting dropped from an upcoming movie because they saw an old skit she did back in 2007. Now, it was a satirical skit. She is Jewish, and she did a whole bit about, I wonder what it's like if it's worse for black people than it is for Jewish people. So she dons blackface to try to prove a point.
You know, man, I wish you could walk a mile in my shoes. I bet you wouldn't last an hour.
I would love to. Why don't we switch places for a day? My friend Eddie Pepitone is like this incredible makeup artist. He'll totally make me black. And then we'll settle the score once and for all.
I'll be back. I'll be black. I'll be white black.
I actually think it's a clever idea for a skit. I think that's kind of funny. But unfortunately, people saw that while she was working on another show, and then they decided, yeah, we can't actually hire you. She was on the Bill Simmons podcast, and here's what she said.
At 11 p.m. the night before, they fired me because they saw that a picture of me in blackface from that episode.
Really?
And, you know... I was just, you know, I didn't fight it. I said, you know, hey, I actually addressed this recently, you know, last year in an episode of my show. And, it wasn't because anyone saw it. I exposed myself, you know, but listen, I'm not that person anymore, but I was doing it. You know, I didn't go to a Halloween party in the 80s in blackface. I was doing an episode about race.
Yeah.
You know, now I understand it's never okay and blah, 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 you know, not to blah, blah, blah it, but, you know, but.
Well, I'll blah, 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 because that's kind of what I'm feeling when I hear you. Like, I want to blah, blah, blah right there on the floor. Try to figure out what it was I meant when I said blah, blah, blah. She is a coward. You would think that this would open her eyes to the intolerant society that she is helping to create, but she's actually just doubling down on making it even more intolerant. No, I do not subscribe to the idea that blackface is never okay. Because when you're doing satire to make a point about the evils of racism, I would certainly say, okay, maybe blackface in that circumstance is in fact okay because it's serving a greater purpose. I also generally take a position of you should be able to joke about anything. Now, the joke may not be funny. It may offend a whole bunch of people, and it might even cause people to stop going to your shows or watching your TV or following you on Twitter, whatever it happens to be. But comedy is supposed to be no holds bar. And she's deciding that all of a sudden we need to be woke. Because not only does she say it there, but in a 2018 GQ article that I found, she said, quote, "I don't stand by the blackface sketch. I'm horrified by it and I can't erase it. I can only be changed by it and move on." I'm sorry. No, that was a good skit. It was funny. And you were trying to make a point. Now, maybe you don't agree with the point you ended up trying to make after you did that sketch. That's okay. But this whole idea that you can't stand by old comedy simply because now you're finding it offensive. With all due respect, back in 2007, when that sketch was there, we kind of understood what blackface was and how it was offensive, but it wasn't offensive in the context that she put it out there. 2007 was just a little over a decade ago. Did people not know the history of blackface? Did we just learn about it in the last couple of years? I seem to remember back in 2007 knowing why blackface was so disturbing. And yet you used it in a way because you wanted to make a comedic point about race. She's not saying the sketch wasn't funny. She's saying she doesn't like how she got to that joke. And so now I look at a story like this and say, good, I'm glad then you lost your job. Because you don't learn. You don't understand. You clearly don't understand the importance of free expression. And if you don't understand the importance of free expression and you're working in the media, you're working in entertainment, you're working in art, that is, as progressives might say, problematic. Also problematic, I would say, is the way that Chris Cuomo from CNN reacted when he was being called Fredo by a few trolls in Shelter Island, New York. He was just going about his day, and all of a sudden someone called him Fredo, and he absolutely lost it.
I thought that's who you were.
No, fuck it. From the right, call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I'm an anchor on CNN. Fredo is from The Godfather. He was that weak brother.
Isn't that your
and
brother?
They use it as an Italian aspersion. Any of you Italian?
I'm a little Italian.
It's a insult to your people. It's an insult to your fucking people. It's like the N-word for us.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It is not the N-word for Italians. There is no such thing as an N-word for Italians. There are certainly insults to the Italian population. You don't necessarily have an N-word. There are some bad things you can say that I wouldn't say. There are certainly slurs out there. I can think of a few that have been used. Those are offensive. They're not the N-word. And we know that because you know what we didn't bleep in all of those bleeps? Fredo. Why don't we bleep Fredo? John Mulaney, who is, by the way, since we were talking about comedy just now, John Mulaney is the funniest stand-up comic, period. He's currently the funniest stand-up comic. I would normally say Louis C.K., but the Me Too thing kind of ruined that.
Nate Bargatze.
I don't know who that is. He has a similar point that he made with the term midget. And someone said, you can't say the term midget because it's the equivalent of the N-word. And he's like, no, it's not. And the reason why is I'm literally saying N-word and not the actual word, and I'm not saying M-word. It was a meme that was going on yesterday as a result of this Chris Cuomo stuff. I don't need anybody else coming up with this victim culture nonsense. We're not all victims. Now, he was being made fun of. There's no doubt about it. And I know why he was getting upset. I still think he went completely overboard in how he got upset, but I understand why he got upset. I would likely be upset as well. Let's stop trying to turn ourselves into bigger victims than we actually are. If someone saw this video and they saw him getting heckled, I think regardless of our political background, we would probably say, okay, man, let's not do that. I don't want you doing it to Chris Cuomo the same way I don't want you doing it to Tucker Carlson. We would at least have some sort of sympathy. Now, maybe the sympathy wouldn't be so much depending on how much we hated the individual in the media, but I think most honest people could say, okay, just let him live his life, man. If you don't like him, we get it. Don't watch the show. Move on. Stop harassing him. So he would already have been viewed as an actual victim. But then he has to say something so absurd that it turns him into a joke. Because no more is the story about how inappropriate it is to harass members of the media in public, who in this case, he was just with his wife and his daughter. didn't want to deal with this. And now instead of having that conversation, which is a valid conversation that we should be having, we're talking about how ridiculous it is to pretend that what he suffered is the equivalent of the N-word, especially because it turns out, shocker, all of his stuff that he's done on TV is also online, and people find clips, including, for example, him referring to himself as Fredo when being interviewed on the Curtis Silva show on WNBC.
La Cuomo Nostra.
This is Curtis.
There is a group of people, of politicos, who always hint that they might run but don't necessarily plunge all the way, and they are members of La Cuomo Nostra.
So who am I then, Fredo?
Yes!
Dude.
He just got called the N-word. That, but with the name of a fictitious Godfather character. That's bad. Donald Trump got involved. I will say this, by the way. I had a funny response to the Chris Cuomo stuff that I threw out there first on Twitter. And it got a whole bunch of retweets and likes. Where I pointed out that this is talking about the red flag scenario of let's keep guns out of people's hands who show some sort of inclination towards inexplicable violence like this and aggression. And I said he would be, from a red flag perspective, he would be denied access to a weapon. People loved it so much that I think the president stole my idea.
His language was horrible. He looked like a total out of control animal. He lost it. And frankly, I don't think anybody could defend him because he spews lies every night. So I don't know why anybody would defend him. But I watched it. I thought it was terrible. Anybody that would have seen Chris Cuomo would have said that was a disgrace. You've never seen me do that. Well, I think Chris Cuomo was so out of control that I would not have wanted to see a weapon in his hand. I guess his fist is not a weapon. Or he would have done something. You know, he talked about it, but he didn't do anything.
So, interesting. I know why he's going after him. Just real quickly, I'm grateful that the president talks to the media as much as he does, but he always does it on his way onto a Air Force One or the, you know, the helicopter that connects him to it. And you can't ever hear him. It's just like, so you're listening to the Jason Rant Show. We're on KTTH Radio. And what's your question? The show starts at 3. It goes on to 6. Yeah, you can download the podcast. You can't hear me, can you? Like, can we stop with that nonsense for the love of all things holy? I do want to hear what he has to say, and he had some really good lines there that probably would have made it, like, on all of the networks, because they were nice little stinging lines, but you can't hear them because of a stupid helicopter. Welcome back to the Jason Ranch Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thing is, do you use dating apps? Not the ones we're about to talk about, but...
No.
You kind of do.
Of course I do.
I see Tinder on your phone. Lots of people use dating apps because, well, for two reasons. Number one, it's a lot easier nowadays to meet people or try to meet people using technology. It's a little bit less annoying and creepy, frankly, to go to bars to meet people. But also people are using it for hookups, which I'm assuming you're not doing that because you're a wholesome young man. But people use different apps because they want to get out there and they want to hook up sometimes. Unfortunately, now we learned that at least in 4 cases of what I'm told are popular hookup apps, I've only actually heard of 2 of them. No, 1 of them I've only heard of. ZDNet is reporting that 4 of these apps have a pretty significant security flaw that allows people to find out exactly where the user lives. They can find out via the GPS system within the app, which tells you how far you are from someone. It can detect your exact address within like a few feet of each other. They say Grindr, Romeo, Recon, and 3Fun. Have you heard of any of those other than Grindr? I've heard of Grindr.
The Romeo one sounds familiar.
Romeo?
Yeah.
Are you on Romeo?
I'm not on Romeo.
Okay, because I think they're all... I don't know what 3Fun is what you think it is. I've never heard of that, but they say it's a popular app. They say all of these apps have been leaking the precise location of users, and it's been possible to develop a tool able to collate all of the exposed GPS coordinates ThreeFun, they write, a mobile application for arranging threesomes and dates, had some of the worst security for any dating app we've ever seen. That according to the team at Pen Test Partners. In some cases, the researchers said that the locations of 8 decimal places in latitude and longitude were reported, which suggests that highly accurate GPS data is being stored on servers. Now, there's certainly been instances in which there have been nightmare scenarios of stalkers using these to go after their victims, but that's still relatively rare, not that you need to be safe. I'm wondering if people are actually that shocked by this information and would change their habits, because it seems like these are mostly hookup apps, and you kind of want people to know where it is that you're living.
Right, but you want to tell the person.
I know, but really, if someone shows up and says, hey, I found you on Romeo, and I want to hook up, you're not going to send him away. Who hasn't been in that position where you just, oh, come on in, have a good time?
That may be overstepping a little bit.
Well, in a related note, let's talk about STDs, which is how we want to end the show today.
Oof.
Scientists say they're close to coming up with a vaccine for chlamydia. They say they already went through an early trial. It was only tested amongst about, I believe it's at 35 women in all, but it went really, really well. It's showing promise. They say chlamydia is the most common bacterial STI, sexually transmitted infection, in the entire world. Over 100 million people have it. And this is one of those, because technically chlamydia can infect a male or a female, but it's particularly bad with women because if it's left untreated, it can cause infertility, right? So it can actually cause some fertility issues. And for a lot of people, they don't realize that they actually have it. It's one of those STDs or STIs that doesn't always show symptoms very clearly or very quickly. And so they're saying, hey, now we're at that point where we've got a first clinical trial for a vaccine for chlamydia, and it's the best development they've had in 15 years. They say there's a lot of work to be done, so don't keep hooking up and getting the clap and then thinking we're going to clear it up very quickly with a shot. We're not near that. And I was thinking about the implications of stuff like this. And, at one point, I would have assumed, and we certainly all, you know, most people of a certain age remember going through sex ed in high school. And at some point, when they stopped doing like the hokey videos, they went all in and did the opposite, which is you are going to die if you have sex and you're going to get all of these dangerous diseases. And they try to basically scare people from the hookup culture. It feels now we're at that point where that doesn't exist anymore. Am I crazy? And I think part of it is because of the hookup app that's created a culture of just hooking up with strangers. And I'm not judging you if that's what you do. I don't care, but it does feel like we've gone back in the other direction of just people not caring about the data. And I'm wondering if this is the whole idea of, well, now we can just give you a vaccine. Does that make it even more likely for people to just go through the hookup culture?
Well, in college, when I took the, that kind of course, I did it for the free credit. They didn't scare us away from
that. You got credit for sex ed?
Yeah, no, it's like, it's a weird course. Okay. But yeah, they pass around.
They pass
around prevention measures and
condoms.
Kind of even some stuff, yeah, you're a little uncomfortable with.
Even in college?
Yeah.
I remember my RA, they would do the rounds every night and they would come, they'd say, hey, how you doing? Knock on the door and they'd have a bowl full of candy and condoms.
It's more than that now.
Oh my God. Really? It's the Jason Rance Show.